Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening and blessings, and welcome to another installment of the Gist for Freedom of Faith. This show is produced by acclaimed historian, educator, and author Leslie Gist, and serves as our weekly live online discussion to celebrate the African American experience by honoring all the people, past and present, black and white, who, with faith and focus, are preserving our rich history through literature, the arts, the skilled trades, and the humanities. We thank you for joining us tonight, and we'd love you to be a part of tonight's discussion by calling in with your comments or questions to 347-324-5552.
Good evening, everyone. This is the Gist of Freedom. I am your host, Dr. Weldon McWilliams. And today we'd like to welcome our guest for the evening, playwright Mr. Tom Mitchelson. Mr. Mitchelson, are you on the air with us?
Yes, I am. Yes, I am.
How are you doing this evening?
I'm fine. I'm wonderful. How are you, Dr. Weldon?
I'm doing well, and I'd just like to thank you again for taking time out of your busy schedule to just share some things with our listeners this evening. Thank you again.
Okay, not a problem.
And if you can, just for our listeners, just introduce yourself, tell us a little bit about yourself, and if you can, tell us a little bit about this play that I'm hearing so much about called Simply Be.
Yes. Well, I'm a writer, playwright, poet. I'm currently director of Harlem Playwrights 21. We're a playwriting group that, as our name says, we are we meet in Harlem. And it's a group of playwrights, actors, and directors, and it's a workshop where we work on plays and we have readings there at the workshop. I'm also formerly a member of New Renaissance Writers Guild. That's where I was writing some fiction, and poetry is my first love. I started writing poetry way back in the 70s. So I've started with poetry, then I've moved through fiction, and now I'm writing plays.
Great, great. And if you can, just tell us a little bit about this current play, B.
Okay, B actually started as a short story. And when I was in New Renaissance Writers Guild, and essentially it's about a woman. Her name is Beatrice Holloway, Professor Beatrice Holloway. She's a professor of Renaissance literature. And the play is set in Little Rock, Arkansas, back in the 70s. And Beatrice Holloway, as the play unfolds, she is 35 years old, but she was raped when she was 14 years old. She was raped, and her mother was also raped by a group of young GIs down there in Arkansas. Her mother was pregnant at the time. So her mother died as a result of this, and Beatrice, goes through life, she has what is now known as a DID, dissociative identity order, or multiple personality disorder.
Uh-huh.
And so she takes on the personalities of her mother, who, as I said, is dead, and also her unborn sister. And she is trying to find some closure and some peace. And essentially, she is a serial killer. So it's a complicated story, but it's a wonderful story.
Oh, right. And what inspired you to write this story, Mr. Mitchell?
Well, as I said, it started out as a short story, and I had a series of stories which was talking about, there was sort of a coming-of-age saga of a young man who's in the military, and at 17, 18 years old, and trying to find himself as a man being away from home. And this particular story took place, and Beatrice, the whole story about B was really, she was a second character in the story. When I joined Harlem Playwrights 21, I had changed this into a play. And in the workshop, the workshop members said that they were really interested in this character who took on these multiple personalities. So B came to the forefront, and the young man, his name is Mike Pierre, moved to the back. But what brought me to write about that character in the first place was that, unfortunately, I knew women who had been raped. And I knew that there were different ways that different women respond to that. It's a traumatic experience. Some of them go into withdrawal. Some of them, unfortunately, fall into nymphomania. Some of them just, you know, take on different personalities. So I found it fascinating. And I saw that when I myself was in the military, when I was a kid. And I guess it was just something that was in the back of my head. And so when I was writing the story and eventually the play, what I did was I took a composite of three different women who...
Hello, Mr. Mitchelson. Are you there?
Hello, Frederick, are you on the line?
Yes, I'm on the line.
Okay, I guess I lost my host and my guest. I'm glad you called in. Would you continue with where they left off? What did you think about this character, B? Because I was just scared of her, to be quite frank.
Well, I think that's I think that that's a very interesting character for an actress to play. I mean, because she has to play three different personalities, and she has to bring each of them to life, and they have to be each individual, and they have to be distinct. So, you know, that's going to be some work for, in this case, Angela to do. You know, and so far she's on a good road. She's doing a good job, and going forward, she's going to be excellent.
Yeah, well, the actress was incredible, and I have hope Dr. McWilliams should be back on, and so should Mr. Mitchell. Are you guys on?
Hi, this is Tom. I'm back.
All right.
Okay, good.
Welcome back, Mr. Mitchelson, and I'm back. And I wanted to talk to Mr. Michaels for a second.
Mm-hmm.
Mr. Michaels, thank you for calling on. And if you can, just share with us your experience in the film and the value that you believe this film possesses, or this play possesses. I'm sorry.
Yeah. I think as Tom was stating, and only Tom can state it, you know, it's invaluable, actually. I mean, it's something we all need to look at. It's just so much. I mean, I'm just overwhelmed. My first experience reading a character in that play, I knew from the very start that it was something special. At least it appeared to be as something special to me. Mm-hmm. And, I definitely... you know, let Tom know that on various occasions.
Yes, you did.
You know, but I think it's a very special play. You know, I definitely think it has a message. I mean, you know, it's, you know, I'm going to give this back to Tom.
Yeah.
And let Tom finish off.
And from what I'm hearing, it seems like the character B might be a character maybe I wouldn't want to run into, but I wanted to know, The issue of, I guess, mental illness, you know, in the African-American community, the issues of mental illness is not really discussed. And, you know, did that have any impact in the story that you sought to tell?
Yeah. Well, you know, as I was saying before, rape is one of the things that is not really discussed that much in the African-American community, or really in the American community at large, but really in terms of what happens in the black community. I remember when I was taking a class as an undergrad, it was a writing class, and there were three African-American women in the class who wrote about rape and their being raped. And it was really a powerful, each night that these women came forward, it was really powerful because it's really not something that you share with other people, and especially with strangers. And I applauded each one of them for coming forward and talking about it. But it's something that happens, unfortunately, and it can be, you know, a family member or a very close friend, someone that you trust. You know, date rape started to, you know, it's a part of our jargon now. It's a word. So we know that these things happen, but what we don't know is how women or even men deal with that. You know, we're looking at this thing that's going on at Penn State, for example, and these young boys are coming forward and talking about the experience, but what we don't know is how they move forward with their lives. So getting back to what brought B to the fore is that I knew a person in the South who was a nymphomaniac, and she knew that, and she knew why she was that. And there was, it was almost like it was something that she couldn't control. And there was also another person who had this personality where she was a professor by day and she was a prostitute by night. And once again, it was something that couldn't be controlled. So it's you know, and these are characters in the play that I've sort of drawn on, these real life people that I remember.
And I think you raised a great point, and especially mentioning what's going on right now at Penn State, in the sense that you have the victims testifying this past week. But, you know, also keeping in mind that there's a mental process that they have to take.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So, I wanted to know, did the films Color Girls or Beloved, did they have any influence in this story?
I know Entezaki, incidentally, and I saw Colored Girls, and I remember when Colored Girls first came on the scene, when it was first done at public theater, and a lot of men folks didn't like it because it showed some things that maybe we weren't comfortable with, maybe we didn't want to fess up to doing, but I thought that it was honest, an honest portrayal of relationships and how, you know, relationships don't always work out. So, yeah, I think maybe that in the back of my head, just in terms of the way that it was staged, it was called a choreo poem, and it was non-traditional theater, per se. There were a lot of extended monologues as opposed to, you know, traditional theater where you have different people talking back and forth. So, right. Yeah, and also when you mentioned The Color Purple, yeah, that's another character. Mister is another character who is abusive to women, but in this particular play, this revolves around one particular incident that happened one particular evening. But she was a 14-year-old girl when this happened. Beatrice is her name, and she was a 14-year-old girl, and she was a virgin. And you know, men sometimes, young guys, you know, virginity is not a big deal with them. It's something that they try to get rid of, you know. Whereas for a woman, it's a precious thing. And one of the things that I'm trying to touch on is that, you know, it's a taking of something that can't ever be replaced. A guy takes this, and it's something that you can't replace that. And there's a part of the victim that dies at that point. And there's no giving that back. So there's really no justice. I mean, so she her sense of justice is the killing of these people who weren't involved in the rape, in the initial rape, but that's the way that she knows best how to find some peace and some closure.
Oh, right. You mentioned some great points there, Mr. Mitchell, and especially the concepts of virginity and the meanings of virginity, I guess, and the differences in the meanings between males and females or men and women. I wanted to get into a conversation about the other characters in the play. If you can just briefly give us a rundown of some of the other characters in the play.
Yeah. One of the characters that Frederick plays is Zeke Jones. He is he's a person from Louisiana, and as a matter of fact, in the play, he and Beatrice were engaged, but he was unfaithful, and she left before she wanted to tell him what had happened to her when she was a 14-year-old. She never was able to do that. And she left. But Zeke Jones actually is acting as her pimp when they reunite down in Little Rock. And he's a big guy, and he's a tough guy. And, you know, so we see him. Then there's a character named Bear. He's a black man, 55 years old, and he owns a bar, a very popular juke joint called Grizzly's Den, down in Little Rock, and he's there because his nephew was killed, and he's trying to find out how that happened. And as a matter of fact, we find out that Zeke Jones was sort of responsible for that. And getting back to Zeke Jones, he is also the product of a rape. His mom used to work for a senator in Louisiana, you know, doing his laundry and doing his clothes and cooking. And, you know, this is part of the legacy of the South, where white men would abuse black women and have children by them. Whether or not they acknowledged them, whether or not they supported them, and most times they didn't acknowledge them or they didn't support them. But Zeke Jones is a product of that, and he does not want to deal with that. He doesn't want to understand that. He doesn't want to hear about that. And that's one of the things that causes friction with he and Beatrice, because he's just shutting off whatever that is. And the final character is a young boy. His name is Mike Pierre, and he's the one that was the genesis for this story. He's a young GI. He's in the South for the first time. And, you know, if you're from the North for your entire life and you go to the South, it's a culture shock. You're in the same country, but it's almost like not being in the same country, if you understand what I mean. I don't know if you've ever been South, but it's a whole nother ball game down there. So Mike Pierre is trying to get his feet wet. He's a virgin, and he's trying to give it away, and nobody will take it. And he's trying to deal with that, and he meets all three of these characters, Beatrice, her unborn sister, Gussie B., and this rough-and-tumble person who is Beatrice's mother, Johnny Mae Merriweather, and she's the one who actually does all the killings. So those are the characters, yeah.
Great. Thank you for that. I'm curious as to know, what is the setting of the play, the time period?
The time period is in the early 70s, and it takes place just outside of Little Rock, Arkansas. Most of the activities you're going to see are at the juke joint, Grizzly's Den, and also in the shack, which is further out, like into the backwoods, if you must say, where the killings actually take place. So it's in the 70s, and one of the things when we get up to production, you know, a lot of the music is, you know, blues music, you know, Big Mama Thornton, Little Willie John, B.B. King, Bobby Blue Bland, that kind of music. So that's the background music, and that's the setting of the play.
Great, great. And what has been the response? Because, you know, this play is dealing with some sensitive issues such as rape and mental disorders and things of that sort. So what has been the feedback that you've received from the play?
For the most part, I would say largely it is very positive. As a matter of fact, we did a reading on Saturday, and Ms. Gist was there, and it got a standing ovation at the end. People really enjoyed it. And when we had a couple of other readings of it, when we had a question and answer period, folks were curious about it, especially the women more than the men, and they understood it, and they were really supportive of it. So,
great.
Sometimes you just write things, and you know, you follow your heart and you follow the truth, and you don't think about what the response is going to be. You're just, as a writer, that's just what you do. You write what you think is the right thing. And fortunately, for this piece, everyone that I've that has experienced it, either in the workshop or in a reading, has really, really been supportive of it, and they really enjoy the story, and they understand where this character is coming from.
That's great. And for our listeners, for those who may not know, Leslie Gist is the producer of this show. And when I talked to her, she told me that it was standing room only. And she raved about the play. So I know she really enjoyed herself. And she said it was only standing room only. So I'm sure that it's receiving rave reviews.
Yes, yes, yes. We're trying to do some more things. Actually, we're looking for producers so we can get it on stage. So if you know anybody that's got long pockets, you can call me and let me. You can call me and let me know.
Well, I'm sure. In any way that we could help, we will definitely make sure that we can do that for you.
I appreciate it.
Yes, sir. Now I wanted to talk again the issue. I'm thinking about the issue of the role that rape played in the play, and we're dealing with, I guess, I don't know how I would say it, maybe in this time period, black rape, I guess. Can we talk about it, I guess, from a racial standpoint? Is it addressed at all?
Oh.
Maybe this notion of, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Okay, well, in this particular instance, actually the men, the young men who raped Beatrice and her mother were white.
Oh,
so,
okay.
I didn't put too much emphasis on that, and the only reason I did was that was the one reason that I pulled my punches, because I'm thinking about how is that going to play in a theater. And so as we move along, that might have been an issue. But when I wrote the original story and this play, it deals with white men who raped this black woman. But if you raise the issue of black men raping black women, that's a concern, and that's a reality. That happens more times than not. And unfortunately, I know someone who was involved in that kind of activity when he was a teenager. And he read Beatrice when it was in a short story form, and it was I guess it was a shock to him, because he confessed to me that he had done these kinds of things when he was a young boy. And back then they called it pulling trains on people, where you would,
wow.
And it was actually gang rapes, where you'd have four, five, six guys would do that.
And I think, and Mr. Mitchell, but I think you're also speaking to is the power of plays to also be, on some level, and in this sense, the short story, a therapeutic, in the sense that maybe there was something within this story that where the young man felt the need to confess. But I did want to talk about the issue that you mentioned before about the rape occurring or happening by two white men, just addressing that issue because, you know, traditionally and historically, you know, mainstream has looked at, you know, the relationship or the raping of black women by white men. They haven't necessarily told that story accurately.
Mm-hmm.
And what comes to mind is, again, you know, Thomas Jefferson and Sally Hemings and just the way that it's portrayed as a love story. But, you know, there are some who believe that, you know, perhaps that relationship wasn't as loving as mainstream would like to perceive. So I'm kind of interested in as to why you might have felt the need to pull the punches, I guess, or hold back a little.
Really, I mean, it's not that I don't. I mean, it's sort of alluded to, and we know that we're talking about young white boys because I call them good old boys, that kind of thing, and that's slang for white boys. But if you read any sort of fiction, for example, or even nonfiction that talks about the times of slavery, and we know that, especially during that time, when we were just considered to be pieces of property, we weren't even people, and so it was a common thing for a white plantation owner, a master, or his son, or just the white man in general, to take a black woman, and they probably didn't even think that it was rape. In their heads, it wasn't rape, maybe, but of course that's what it was. And in this play, there's a mention of we're talking about Zeke Jones's mother with the white senator, and the line in there says that she knew that she had better go on and do what this guy wanted to do, or there would be consequences. It could be that she would lose her job. It could be that she would be killed. So, you know, there's a way to force somebody to do something against their will without physically holding them down and raping them. If you have that sort of power over them, whether it's financial or especially if it's psychological, they will go on and lay down with you without you forcing them to do that. But they are being forced to do that because there's coercion that's psychological. And that goes across the board. You know, whether it's you're in a relationship with, it could be even your husband. You know, we see more and more that there are women who are saying that their husband raped them. You say, well, how does that jibe? You know, what are we talking about? Well, you have men who just assume that it's their right to have sex with you because you are my wife. And that borders very closely on my wife, I own her, and she's supposed to do this. So there's all kinds of different levels of rape, how that happens. It doesn't necessarily have to be, you know, somebody holding somebody down and forcing themselves on someone. It can be just a psychological thing, and you go along with it as opposed to whatever the consequence is if you don't go along with it.
Great point. Mr. Michaels, are you still there with us?
Yes, I'm still here.
All right, Mr. Michaels, I just wanted, you played the role of Zeke Jones, correct?
Yes, I did.
And I just wanted to know, how did you go about preparing for that role? And what did you think of the character?
I think Zeke Jones, you know, just as all the rest of the characters, you know, there's a lot of depth to Zeke Jones. As far as how I went about trying to prepare for it, it's still a work in progress because you never really truly get to the end of your preparation. You're preparing every time you go up there and read the role. It's always something new that you find out about your character. And the more you read it and the more you get involved and the more you hear the other characters in the play, that's your development. It's just constant. It's ongoing. You never truly arrive. You always reaching out, finding out new things that you didn't even know. And so all I can say is that as I read it, the several times that I have read that character, you know, other things opened up to me. And, you know, and as other things open up to me, that's the way I'm going to give my responses to the other characters. And hopefully things will open up for them as well. And it does, you know, so it's like a give and take type of adventure, if you want to call it.
Let me just add a little story, and Frederick can attest to this. When we first started the process of reading the play, Frederick was reading the part of the young boy, Mike Thiers, and someone else was playing Zeke. Now, you know, not to tell tales out of school on Frederick, but he was a little bit older than 20. So we started looking around for a younger person. So Frederick has the advantage of knowing the Mike Pierre, the young boy role, and now that he is switched over to playing Zeke Jones, because there's a relationship back, there's a sort of antagonistic relationship, a love-hate relationship with Zeke Jones and the young boy. So he is even more prepared to do that because he at one time, he was this young character. So,
And Mr. Michaels, I guess in asking if you how you prepared, do you know any Zekes or have you had any experiences or relationships maybe with a Zeke-like character in your life that you know maybe pulled from?
Yeah, Zeke is like a bully, you know, and we all had bullies. Well, for the most part, a great number of us had bullies in our lives. I definitely had a lot of bullies in mine. You know, I grew up in East Harlem. I came from the Bronx. You know, so we all had those type of characters and individuals in our life, and we had to, you know, deal with them whatever way we could have. And a whole lot of that situation, and, you know, we all grew up around that. We knew tales of it. If it wasn't in other people's families, it definitely was within our own. So, yeah, you just draw from your own experiences and you kind of share your experience, whatever experience you may have or association that you may have with your character. So to help blend that in, merge that in, and bring that character, in my case, Zeke, to life. And, you know, as I stated before, it's an ongoing process. The next time I read it, I should be even more involved with that Zeke character, and the more I read it, the deeper I'll be with Zeke, and you know, the more I hear Tom, you know, relate the story behind Zeke and the other characters, you know, you store that away and you use it, and you know, it's about, you know, how would I feel, you know, for this to take place, and then, you know, taking me out of it and putting Zeke in there. You know, it's fun. It's a fun process, but it is work. That's for sure.
Yeah.
And what, again, if you either one of you can again just briefly describe the relationship between Zeke and B one more time.
Beatrice, after the rape, when she's 14 years old, and her mother is dead also, she relocates to New Orleans. And that's where she meets Zeke Jones. Zeke Jones is about 5 years older than she is. And so when she's about 20 years old and Zeke is about 25 years old, he proposes to her to be married. And, you know, he doesn't want to wait until the wedding night to consummate their relationship. And he doesn't know what has happened to her in the past, and she's a little uncomfortable. She can't bring herself to tell him about her being raped, and she's really not comfortable yet with, you know, being sexually active. So he grows impatient, and he cheats on her, and she finds out that he has, in fact, been unfaithful a couple of days before they're supposed to be married, and she leaves. She goes to another place, and Zeke eventually finds himself down in Little Rock, and that's where they meet each other once again some years later, and
okay.
She's able to tell him what's going on.
All right. I don't want you to get the play away, but I did want to talk about a particular part. I was talking to Ms. Gibson, and she was talking about the scene with, I believe, is it Gussie B and,
uh-huh.
and the switchblade scene. If you could just briefly give us that scenario.
Okay. That character is Johnny Mae Merriweather, and
okay.
This is the mother of Beatrice, and
okay.
These two characters, these two personalities that Beatrice takes on, Gussie B, and her mother Johnny Mae, just for a twist in the story, these two characters are deceased, but they talk to her and they interact, they talk to one another, they listen in on each other's business. So here's the scenario: is Gussie B is a young flirtatious character, 21 years old, and she is acting as a prostitute. And Zeke Jones is her pimp. And they lure white boys to the shack. They've got them liquored up on some knockout moonshine. And when they get them to the shack, the Johnny Mae Merriweather character emerges with the straight razor, and she uses the straight razor to kill these white boys. And the reason that she does that is because in the original rape scene, her man, who is his name is Gustavo, we never meet him, but in her telling of the story, after these boys rape she and her daughter, they slit Gustavo's throat. So it's a symbolic use of the straight razor, and that's why she uses a straight razor. And she's a rough and tumble kind of gal. Once again, I don't know if you've ever been in a juke joint down in the South, but you know she's got a scar that runs from behind her ear down across her chin. She's a, you know, she's a fighter, you know. So.
Yes, sir. Okay. Wow. Yeah, I've never been to a juke joint in the South, so I'm definitely going to try to make sure I could definitely see this play. And if you can, for our listeners, can you just let us know where this play is happening and when it's taking place and where it's running?
Well, right now we're about to take a break for the rest of the summer, but there's a place, the African Poetry Theater. It's located out in Jamaica, Queens, and they want us to do a reading out there. So it'll probably be in early September when we'll do it again. I'll let Miss Just know, and you can pass that on to your listeners. And also, in July, we're going to do a radio drama version of it. So that's that. I'm looking forward to that. That's exciting. And so I'll also let you know about that.
Please do, and definitely we will make sure that our listeners know about that, as I'm sure many of them want to tune in. And if any of our listeners wanted to get in contact with you at all, Mr. Mitchelson, how would we go about doing that?
They can reach me. My email is tompierre3@yahoo.com. That's tompierre3@yahoo.com. And also Harlem Playwrights 21 is on Facebook, and I'm also on Facebook. You know, you can, you know, I don't use it that much, but if you want to, you can go on Facebook and Tom Mitchelson, you can find me. But the easiest way would be via email. And once again, that's tompierre3@yahoo.com.
And if you can, I know you said that you're going to do a radio version of the play. If you can give us that radio station.
Yeah, I'm looking to do it on WBAI. That's 99.5 FM. So we are going to do we're going to settle down and try to do the actual taping of it, of the play, in July, and we're in negotiations with WBAI when they have the time to air it. Actually, I would like to do all of the other stories involved in the there's six short stories, and Beatrice or B is just one of six stories. So I'm going to try to get all six of them done.
Oh, wow, that sounds excellent. And I hope that we can work out something where perhaps we could do that reading right here on the Gist of Freedom. We would love to have a reading of the play over on the Gist of Freedom. I think that would be a great thing to happen.
Oh, that'll be great. That'll be great. You just let me know, and we'll be there. That'll
all
be great.
All right. Sounds good. And I know you said sometime in July. Do you know the exact date, or is that still in the working?
Well, July, that's still in the works.
Okay.
I just got in touch with the engineer who's going to tape this for me, and so we're looking at taping the play or putting the play, you know, putting the play together. The first 2 weeks in July, and then when we have the finished product, we're going to be talking to WBAI. So, you know, it's an ongoing process.
That sounds great. And, we'd just like to thank you, Mr. Mitchelson and Mr. Michaels, for taking time out of your busy schedule to share and tell this story and share your work with our listeners today. So is there any last words, any lasting words or last thing you would like to say before we sign off the air?
Yeah, I would just like to say that I'm very pleased with the progress that the play has made, and I'm extremely, extremely happy with the cast that I have. Frederick Michaels as Zeke Jones and Sean C. Turner as Bear, and Eddie K. Robinson as the young Mike Pierre, and Angela Rostick is just fantastic. She is just fantastic playing all three of these women. One actress playing three different women and three different voices. She plays Johnny May, she plays Gussie B, and she plays Beatrice Holloway. And she is fantastic, and the entire cast, I love them so much, I'm so proud of them.
Sounds great. And Mr. Michaels, did you have anything you would like to say before we signed off?
I just like to say thanks, Tom. Tom said it all.
Okay. And Mr. Mitchell, I'm sorry, before we let you go,
yeah.
The radio station WBAI, would this be the first time they would have a reading or something of this sort on their radio programming?
No, actually, we did the six stories way back in 1993. I have a couple of tapes, and I was listening to it today, as a matter of fact. And you know, you're always your worst critic. And I said, "Oh man, this sounded horrible." I thought it was great at the time, but I'm listening to it some 10 years later. I'm saying, "Oh man, this could be better. That could be better." So it's going to be that much better this time around. And WBAI is at 99.5 FM, for those folks who don't know.
Well, again, Mr. Mitchelson and Mr. Michaels, we thank you for taking time out of your busy schedule to just talk to us about this play, Simply B, the play B. And it sounds interesting. I'm definitely looking forward to hearing more and looking at it myself. So
all
thank
right.
You again for
and thank you, thank you for having us both on your show.
No problem. And to the listeners, again, this is Gist of Freedom. I am your host, Dr. Walden McWilliams. And until next time, God bless.
Bye-bye.